Welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, your source for learning more about fly fishing in cold water, warm water, and salt water. Hello, I'm Roger Maves, your host for tonight's show. On this broadcast, we'll be featuring Gary Bulla, and he'll be answering your most important questions on kayak fly fishing in Baja, Mexico. This show will be 90 minutes in length, and we are broadcasting live over the Internet. If you'd like to ask Gary a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And while you're there, make sure you sign up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Just fill in your name and email address in the form on our homepage, and we'll keep you informed. This broadcast is being recorded and will be available for playback on our website within 24 hours after the show ends. So if you have to leave early, you can return to our website at your convenience and listen to the broadcast at any time. The content of this broadcast is copyrighted and the property of the Knowledge Group, Inc., doing business as Ask About Fly Fishing. Recordings or transcriptions of this program cannot be distributed or sold in any form. When we return, we'll be talking with Gary Bulla about kayak fly fishing in Baja, Mexico. Keeney's Fly Shop in Sacramento, California features classes on all aspects of fly fishing. They have an extensive inventory and fly tying department and a friendly, experienced staff whose primary goal is your complete satisfaction. Among their many services, one can book private waters or take advantage of their international travel service. Visit their extensive website at www.keeney.com. That's K-I-E-N-E.com. Or call Keeney's Fly Shop at 1-800-400-0359. That's 800-400-0359. Well, before we introduce Gary, we'd like to let you know about the great gifts we have to give away tonight. On our drawing tonight, we'll be giving away a one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers and a one-year subscription to Fly Fusion magazine. So you have two chances to win tonight in our drawing. Now, if you haven't registered yet for the drawing, you can do so now. Just go to our homepage, which is at askaboutflyfishing.com, and look for the link under Gary's section that says click here to register for our drawing. Click on that link and fill out the form, and we'll announce the winners at the end of the show. We will also be giving away a $20 gift certificate from Front Range Anglers in Boulder, Colorado. If you want to know more about Front Range Anglers, you can go to frontrangeanglers.com and visit their website. They have a great newsletter and stock on just about anything you need for fly fishing. So to win this $20 gift certificate, which you can redeem in their shop or online on their online store, you must be the first person to answer the question I ask at the end of the show. That question is going to be something that Gary and I talked about during the show, and the first person that answers it and fills out the text box on our homepage and submits that will win a $20 gift certificate. So listen carefully, pay attention, and hopefully you'll be the person that answers that correctly at the end of the show and win that $20 gift certificate. Well, tonight our guest is Gary Bulla. Gary grew up on the beaches and waters of the Southern California coast. He combined his longtime love for the ocean and his passion for fly fishing with the convenience of having big fish right at his back door. He quickly realized that there was not a great deal of information out there about catching saltwater species on the fly, and he began to use his knowledge of tides and tidal life to not only chase down surf, perch, but corbina, halibut, and sea bass. He began guiding others and holding seminars on surf fishing. Through this, his website and other information on fly fishing, the surf exploded and a new fishery was born. He also began cruising the kelp beds in his kayak and developing flies that would attract the many varieties of fish found on the Southern California coast. Idlewild Flies named him a signature tire and launched their saltwater line of flies using his proven patterns. The Grimmy Surf Fly was featured in California Fly Fisher magazine. And another fly that has become a standard in the big game fly industry is in Baja and beyond is his tuna tux. During this time, he began accompanying his wife on trips with their eighth grade school children to Baja's Magdalena Bay. And he brought his fly rod along and became astounded at the incredible variety of fish that were available in the waters of Baja. This began a second quest and more years of experimentation that have led to his being one of the most active fly fishing guides for Baja waters and one of the more knowledgeable saltwater fly fishers from Point Concepcion to the Sea of Cortez. He's landed over 130 species of fish in the salt on the fly. He guides kayaking fly fishing trips to Espiritu Santo Island and San Jose Island several times a year. And in addition to leading blue water trips to Sergio Cortez and in Belize. Back at home, he teaches and guides fly fishing in the surf in Southern California waters as well. Well, Gary, that's a long introduction, and welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing.
Thank you, Roger, and you did quite well on those names.
On those words, yeah, my Spanish is not up to par, I'll tell you. There is my English most of the time, but, So, we had snow today up here in Bailey, Colorado. Do you have any snow out there?
Oh, a little bit, but since it's about 80 degrees, it melted off pretty fast.
Yeah, California is a little balmy this time of year, right?
Yeah, very nice.
Yeah, where you're at, anyways. And, well, listen, we've got lots of questions tonight, and we're going to be covering kind of two aspects. One is fly fishing in Baja, which we could probably do a show or two on itself, but I'm going to have you introduce us into your special waters for kayak fly fishing. And then we'll talk specifically about boats and using the kayak to fly fish with and the ins and outs of how to do that best. So, ready to get going?
Sure.
Okay, great. Well, first of all, let's talk about Baja. Where in Baja, now you do guiding down there, where in Baja do you do your kayak fly fishing? And I know it's a couple of different places, I believe.
Actually, it's in both sides of Baja. For the first 15 years or so, I was mostly running trips to Espiritu Santo and San Jose Island. Espiritu Santo is a beautiful volcanic island off of the coast of La Paz. And that's just north of the East Cape. Many people are familiar with where the East Cape is. And north of there, about 2 hours, is San Jose Island, a much more remote island with more difficult access also. And they're both very interesting places and very, very different. These days, the island that I'm visiting the most on my kayak fishing trips, Isla Magdalena, which forms the sandbar barrier, the outer barrier that forms Magdalena Bay, which is directly west of Loreto, about two-thirds of the way down the Baja Peninsula, and on the Pacific side. And it's a huge bay, larger than San Francisco Bay, and it's filled with mangrove esteros, and like I said, the outer island that forms the bay is all sand dunes, and it's really a very, very rich place to be, full of all kinds of sea life, and it hasn't really been developed heavily. So I originally went down there for the gray whales with my wife and her students in February, and we've done that for 20 years, but in the meantime, I started fishing in the mangroves, the esteros, the tidal mangrove rivers, and it was amazing how bountiful it was, full of fish.
Well, now...
So that's the trip I'm doing this year.
Okay, on Magdalena Bay, on the west side of
yes.
the peninsula. Now, you just mentioned that that has a, it sounds like a specific fishery with lots of mangroves, and that differs quite a bit. Are you using the kayak on the east side, too, on the east
yes,
cape?
Yes, on both sides. Okay. All of my kayak trips, we live on an island. We have a big beach camp set up and a full-time cook with us, and we have the kayaks with us, and we have a boat support available, and we live on the island itself, which makes it a little bit more of a real adventure. You know, since we're in self-powered vehicles and using fly rods for a challenge, we're also living on an island instead of a hotel. So that really rounds out the whole trip. And what we do is we paddle from the island over into the esteros. They're like huge tidal rivers that wind back into the mangroves. And the species, as you started to mention, in Magdalena Bay are quite different than the species over in the Sea of Cortez and the islands over there.
Well, you don't have, in the Sea of Cortez, too, you don't have the mangroves there as well, right?
Actually, we do. That's one
of
the really
okay.
unique things about San Jose Island. On the southern end of San Jose Island is a lagoon that's about 3 miles long and about a mile wide, and it is lined with mangroves and has a tidal mangrove river that enters into it that's about a mile long also. So it's really, really an interesting environment, quite different than anything else in the Sea of Cortez. Isla Espiritu Santo, being volcanic, has a lot of deep coves, and at the back of some of the coves are some small lagoons. They're much shallower and not nearly as fishy as the big lagoon on San Jose Island, but also very interesting places, especially if you like birds. There is a lot of birds of all different kinds nesting in the mangroves there.
Is there anything, the mangroves sound like a, part of the scheme of things as far as good fishing goes, because there's cover and so forth there. When you think of kayak fishing, and I know you've done a lot of kayak fishing up in the Southern California coast as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
What makes good kayak fly fishing? I mean, is there anything that makes it
Well, one of the reasons I really like mangroves, of course, is you get protection from the wind. Besides the habitat being so rich, they're nurseries for all the larger fish out in the deeper ocean. But they really do provide protection, calmer waters, and that's the reason I like islands also. You can use islands for shelter if the wind's blowing strong in the afternoon one direction, then you don't fish on that side of the island, or you can tuck in behind a point and still be fishing. So besides the uniqueness of islands themselves as a little mini world microcosm, they offer a lot of protection for kayak fishermen. And one of the real advantages of being a kayak fisherman is we can get very tight to the shoreline. We can sneak into places that boats can't go.
So you don't spend any real time out in the open sea, so to speak?
We do. If the weather's good, we absolutely do.
Okay.
Especially moving from, you know, say one cove to another or one point to another, we will paddle along. We'll actually troll a fly instead of using a fish finder a lot of times. We'll troll a fly, and if we run across a school of fish that way, we'll stop and start casting. And that's a good way to find fish. But it's not uncommon to get hooked up to, say, a black skipjack is one of our most common catches around Espiritu Santo in San Jose Island in the open water, and you get hooked up to a 10-pound tuna. I think black skipjack are stronger for their size and weight than almost any fish out there. And we wave goodbye and get hauled out to sea, sometimes, you know, a quarter mile, and it's a lot of fun. We call it the Baja Sleigh Ride.
Oh, okay. All right. Sounds good. Now, you said there's different species of fish on both sides. Why don't you pick a side and tell us about what you fish for on either side?
Very good. On the Sea of Cortez side, I think a lot of people are more familiar with the species over there, and more people have fished over there. There are, of course, Dorado, tuna, roosterfish, jack crevalle. In kayaks, we do a lot of snapper fishing because we're fishing around structure. And those are called pargo down there, triggerfish. And on the Pacific side, in the mangroves, our most common catch is probably the spotted bay bass. One of our most pursued quarries is a broomtail grouper and the shortfin corvina. And shortfin corvina, we're catching up to 12 pounds. This year we're going down a little bit later, actually, to get into a little bigger run of the shortfin corvina. But they're all very, very strong fish. Around the mangroves in the Sea of Cortez, it would be a barred pargo or barred snapper instead of the broomtail grouper that dominate the roots of the mangroves and often slam the nose of our kayak into the mangroves when we hook up. So they're a very, very strong fish and really hard to turn, and very exciting because of that too.
Now, so you mentioned you're going down later, which indicates seasonal activity down there. So is it more per fish if you're after a particular, targeting a particular fish? Does that
Generally speaking, that's true. In the Sea of Cortez, hosting the kayak trips and the panga trips or boating trips, people are always asking me, you know, well, what's the best time to come down? Well, it really depends on, generally speaking, depends on what you want to catch. The jack species like roosterfish, yellowtail, jack crevalle, even the snappers, they tend to be a lot more prevalent in the cooler waters, which would be the springtime. So I usually look at my May trips as the time to go down and catch big roosterfish. Now, that said, we get roosterfish all year long, and sometimes we get large roosterfish later in the season, too. But I'm speaking in generalities here. June and July, especially during July, the hotter months are when bigger Dorado start moving in to the area, and you have a much better chance of catching a 50-pound Dorado on a fly rod in the middle of July. Of course, that's when it's hottest, but also later in the fall, yellowfin tuna especially will begin to arrive, the larger ones. Again, they're often there earlier. In fact, they're in Baja right now, from what I understand. They tend to be smaller sometimes earlier in the year, unless you go out, you know, quite a ways out. But school Dorado, schoolie-sized Dorado, you know, up to 20 pounds, also tend to be a fall fish. Billfish, especially sailfish, show up quite a bit from July through October. So there's some seasonal variation. I usually don't fish down there between November and May with clients. I will go down sometimes in February because there are big yellowtail around in February and March, but the wind tends to dominate a lot of the days, so it makes it pretty hard on hosting trips and being dependable fishing.
Sure. Now, you had mentioned, did you say billfish or sailfish?
Marlin and sailfish, yes.
Okay. You catch those from a kayak?
You know, I haven't targeted marlin or sailfish from a kayak. The big difference between the method we use for kayak fishing and the method we use for fishing from pongas or small open boats is that on the kayaks, we don't use chum. We don't use live bait to attract fish to us. So we have to find them or they have to show up near us. And that's especially true for blue water species. In the mangroves, the location of the fish is much easier to predict. Whereas in open water, you really need live bait to keep the fish near the area where you are, especially with pelagic fish like tuna or even billfish. They need something to keep them interested or they're moving on. So it's not a fish that we target. We don't troll for them. We don't troll teasers for billfish, but I'm sure it will happen.
That's where you're going to get a Baja sleigh ride of your life, I would think.
Absolutely, yeah.
You might be gone for a couple days.
You know, mentioning that, though, Roger, something really interesting about kayak fishing is that you can use the kayak to fight the fish. It's actually it's a form of drag that you can use to your advantage, whereas if you're on a boat, you have to have the captain controlling the boat while you're fighting the fish, and you may back down on the fish, or if it's a large enough boat, you may be stuck, you know, to a particular spot. But with a kayak, even hooked to a really large fish, you can actually gain line while it's running. You can just keep reeling because your kayak ends up being pointed right at the fish. It just naturally pulls around and points the direction the fish is going. And you can start reeling and gaining back line. If you really want to put more drag on, you can hang your feet over the side and add some drag.
Interesting. Yeah. Question from the internet came in here. Steve Schramm in Petaluma, California, asks about, is there any snook fishing in the mangroves there in Baja?
That is a very interesting question. And the reason I started going to San Jose Island after flying over it and seeing this huge mangrove lagoon is I thought, oh my God, there's a remote spot that might actually still hold some of the famous black snook of Baja. And we went there for several years and we caught all kinds of fish, but we did not catch snook. Until one year, one client just got out in the very middle of the lagoon in the deepest part and just sort of dangled his sinking line right down to the bottom and really wasn't paying much attention and hooked and landed a 32-inch black snook, which was incredible. And that's about the only time it's happened.
Wow.
Actually, on that same trip, a rod got broken, a rod got lost overboard in the same area, so we think there were snook there that did that damage, too. But so they were there.
Not real common, huh?
But not a common catch. They catch them in La Paz Bay in the fall by trolling conventionally. There's some big ones that come into La Paz Bay and lay up in there. But not real common, no. But they are around. They cruise the surf, and people fish for them on the East Cape, or I would say actually more on the west side of the Lower Cape of Baja. They do a lot of conventional fish for them, night fishing for them, and with some success.
Okay. Well, we need to take a quick break here, Gary, but when we come back, we'll talk more about using a kayak for fly fishing in Baja, Mexico. Our approach is simple, education. Fly Fusion is unique when it comes to fly fishing magazines. It is one of only a few magazines in North America that focuses on instruction and education. In Fly Fusion, we've covered subjects like short line nymphing, tactics for tough days, stillwater fly patterns, dry fly fishing for fussy trout, and a host of other interesting and educational topics. Visit our website today at www.flyfusionmag.com. That's flyfusionmag.com. And start your subscription to Fly Fusion today so that you can learn all you need to know about fly fishing. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We're talking with Gary Bula about kayak fly fishing in Baja, Mexico. If you'd like to ask Gary a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com. And use that Q&A text box on our homepage to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Well, before we get back into it, Gary, why don't you tell us a little bit about what you're doing in the fly fishing world? I know you do more than kayak fly fishing. So tell us about you and your business and what's happening.
Well, I'm located in Southern California, where I really got started in saltwater fly fishing was in the surf along the beaches here in Southern California. It seemed, as you mentioned in your introduction, it seemed to me like a great fishery, and I knew that there were a few people in past years fishing it, and like Nick Curcione and a few others, and I started fishing it very avidly and decided that corbina, California corbina, which are really only in Southern California and down into a little ways into Baja, Mexico, it's almost down to Mag Bay, are a very worthy adversary. We sight fish for them. They're extremely difficult, and they're a lot of fun. So I would say they're probably more difficult than permit. And what's really interesting is we're using a merkin-type fly that imitates our local sand crab, a fly that a local named Paul Cronin came up with, which has proven to be one of the best flies for saltwater, for sight fishing for these fish. Besides that, I guide down, I host trips all through the spring and summer and into the fall, where we take over a small hotel in a little village down in southern Baja, just south of La Paz, and we fish around Serralvo Island. That was the other island you were trying to pronounce there, which is the most southernmost island in Baja, and it's an amazing place. It's just this mountain that comes straight up out of the sea, and you've got reefs miles wide along one side of it and drop-offs down to 5,000 feet pretty nearby. So there's a lot of pelagic fish moving through that area, and it's got all different kinds of habitat, which makes it an extremely, extremely prolific place to cast a fly. So that's most of my trips is doing that, and then if I can scare up a hardy group, I do a couple of kayak fishing trips every year, and those are, like I said, island-based, and all my trips are completely catered, so you know, everything but your plane fare, which makes it real nice. You come down with your gear and get a real experience. Catch such a huge variety of fish on all the trips. It always amazes people on their first trip.
Why don't you share with folks your website address so that they can...
Thank you. My website is GaryBulla.com, and my phone number is 805-933-1367.
Okay, great. Now, when people... Southernmost island you were talking about in Baja... There you're using more pongas and so forth, aren't you, than kayak?
That's right, exactly. Yeah. All those trips are ponga-oriented, and we stay in a small hotel. We have a cook there and take the place over. So
okay.
We're looking right at Serralvo Island in a little village. We have some paddle boards there. We don't have shopping like they do in La Paz for the non-fishing spouse, but we have paddle boards, snorkeling, and kayaks there, and some good snorkeling close by, too.
Okay. We got Tim in Illinois asks, he says, this looks like an incredible amount of fun. My wife wants to go to Mexico, and I've been putting it off. However, if I can fish while we were there, I might just change my mind. Can you recommend places to go and stay for someone on a tight budget and has a non-fishing wife?
Well, that's a very good question. There's a lot of places to stay in the East Cape and in Southern Baja, and I would recommend any of the hotels along the East Cape, or just depends on how adventurous you are. If you're willing to go camping, you can do a low-budget camping trip out to Espiritu Santo. There are several outfitters in La Paz, like Baja Outdoor Adventures is one great company that I work with down there, and they will set you up, get you out to the island and with kayaks, and you could camp and fish and do a great trip that way if you wanted to. Of course, you won't have me along to point out habitat for you and how to do it, but it can be done. That's how I got started, too. So besides that, you could stay at several hotels like Rancho Leonardo on the East Cape, and there's a whole string of them there, and you could hire Ponga guides, or you could, most of the hotels now also have kayaks, and you can rent kayaks and go out and fish that way. So there's a lot of different ways to do it down there.
When you do your kayak trips, you said everything's included except for your airfare. Does that mean your kayak as well?
Absolutely. We provide kayaks. We provide a very nice high back, good fishing seat, and even tents to stay in.
Okay. Now, Chris in Boise, Idaho, says, have you fished from a kayak in the waters surrounding, and this is out of the area, but Placentia, Belize? I believe you've mentioned that in your bio as well.
Actually, I haven't, and I would love to, but that is not something that I've done. I've fished from a mother boat out of Belize City several times for tarpon and snook and bonefish and permit in that area. But it looks like a fantastic area to do that, and I know a good friend of mine, Brian O'Keefe, has done that several times and loves paddling up those rivers and fishing for baby tarpon.
Yeah, Chris asked about the kind of fish down there. Now, I've been to Placentia myself, and it's got a lot of mangroves and a huge bay behind Placentia as well. And I know they get a lot of snook there, and permit and tarpon as well. Not much bonefish in that area. And I don't know what other mangrove fish they have there, but and they've also got rivers that you can kayak up, like Monkey River and so forth.
Right,
there.
Right.
Yeah, so.
Yeah. Real adventure, definitely.
Yeah. What other areas of the country or the world do you know of that are good places to kayak fish?
Well, of course, freshwater lakes are, California's full of freshwater lakes. I've kayaked in quite a few of those. I've kayak fished the kelp beds along in Southern California. San Diego's a great area to do that because it tends to be calmer water out there and a lot of kelp to fish around. The Channel Islands along our coast here, Santa Cruz Island, Catalina Island, those are all great places to kayak fish because it's easy to get shelter if the wind does come up, and you can hug the coastline and find a lot of calico bass, halibut, sometimes white sea bass also. So it's a great venue. The Channel Islands are a really unique place also. I guess I'm very island-oriented when it comes down to it. That's where I like to do most of my fishing, is near or around islands.
Let's talk about kayaks for a bit here. We've got lots of questions on kayaks. Harry in Chapel Hill, Tennessee says, what kind of kayak do you use in salt water?
Good question, Harry. I really prefer a sit-on-top kayak, and I think most fishermen do. A sit-on-top kayak allows you access to your gear. They tend to be more stable, and especially if you're a fly fisherman, you have a place to strip your line right into your lap is what we normally do. And if you're in a touring-type kayak, a sit-inside-type kayak, your arms and your elbows are up a little bit higher, you're down in a little bit deeper, and it's a lot more difficult to cast, especially if you're double-hauling. It's also more difficult to strip your line into your lap. You're basically stripping it off a rounded top of a kayak, and it just doesn't work very well. So sit-on-top kayaks, these days, a lot of manufacturers are designing really nice fishing kayaks that are just set up for fishing. Ocean Kayak and Wilderness Kayaks. I know Ocean Kayak's one of my favorites, and I'm on their pro team, so I have to throw that in there. But
sure.
They've got several kayaks that are just fantastic and really well thought out and designed through a big team of fishermen. That, in fact, we can stand up in them now to cast in calmer water, so that's another real advantage, and I'm sure that's probably going to be a question someone's going to ask about also.
Yeah. Well, I have to throw this one in. He already answered his question. Or I don't know if it's he or she because his initials, H.J. Lim, in Jakarta, Indonesia. So we had a question. I think that's the first question we've had from Jakarta, Indonesia on our show. So I'm glad we have listeners there. And there's a lot of islands over in Indonesia, so I bet you the kayaking's good over there.
Oh, I bet. Yeah.
Wonderful. Question from Silas Gray in Missouri wants to know, are you using any of the new pedal or trolling motor kayaks?
Well, you know, I haven't used a pedal kayak. I've been talking to a lot of people lately about them, and they seem to really, really, really like them. If someone would come up with a pedal kayak that offered some of the features that new fishing kayaks offer, that could be a real plus. Maybe I should mention a few of those features.
Yes.
One of them is an open cockpit behind you so that you can keep a box of whatever you want, your flies, some water, maybe a camera or a dry bag that holds those items, maybe some snacks, and possibly an anchor depending on where you're fishing. And, of course, the beam on the boat, the width of the boat being nice and wide so you can easily stand up. So it would be hard to stand up in a pedal-type kayak, I think. You'd obviously have to use your paddle or pole to move along that way. But I think that's something that would really be fun. A trolling motor, that's okay. Part of the reason I really like fly fishing from a kayak is the simplicity of it. if you ask a lot of the conventional guys that fish from kayaks, they're going to have a ton of gear, you know, a bait tank and all kinds of stuff behind them in the kayak and in front of them, actually, a fish finder and a few other things. I really like the simplicity of it. I like keeping things simple so my line isn't getting caught on things also. But a motor kind of defeats the pureness of self-propelling, I guess. Other than that, it would probably be a great thing, you know. I could really see possibly using a trolling motor in freshwater more than I could in saltwater. So it might be more conducive to that type of environment.
It seems to me I've seen some kayaks with, like, and I think these were, like, extendable outriggers or something to give stability.
Yes, yes.
Have you had experience with those?
No, I haven't. Again, the extendable outriggers would probably be a great thing, especially for someone who wants confidence while they're standing up. But for me, having an extendable outrigger like that is going to be something else I'm going to get tangled up on when I'm fighting a big fish and it's swinging around the kayak in a big circle. That's one reason in Baja I never use an anchor with a rope. Not only that, but an anchor in a kayak when the wind's blowing or waves are coming up can actually be quite dangerous. But it's another issue that just complicates things a little bit too much for me.
So you really like it. You like being a minimalist as far as the kayak goes.
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
And most of our repeat clients have slowly gone that way. When we first started fishing down there, we set up our kayaks with pole holders, you know, rod holders behind us, and we'd stick our rods in those and paddle around trolling, trying to find fish, and we soon discovered that that was more hassle than it was worth. It was a lot better to have our rod pointing back as close to the water line as possible and as straight as possible, and the reel just sort of tucked in between our knees, so we could grab it real quickly and set the hook if we were trolling. It was a lot easier than taking it out of a rod holder. And besides, you couldn't get a good low angle on the water, and most of the time the fish would hit the fly and come off immediately because of the bend in the rod. Fly rods just aren't made to have to be sticking up, you know, at a vertical angle and hook fish.
Right. Question from Tom in Conway, South Carolina. He says, what kind of kayak is best for a 70-year-old? The one I have is too heavy. And so are there any suggestions other than the ones you've mentioned that are better for or lighter?
Yeah, there is one brand of kayak, which I cannot remember off the top of my head right now, that is a very, very light kayak for its size. And I think it only weighs about 38 pounds, actually. Whereas most of the 13 to 15-foot fishing kayaks are in the 55 to 60-pound range, even up to 65 pounds. So that might be a really good one for them. And I know a freshwater kayaking professional friend of mine, Ricky Noel Mitchell, who has a website, also talks about the different types of kayak, and I know he mentions that one on his site. So that might be a good place for Tom to go.
Okay, do you know his website address for his?
That would be, no, I think if you just type in Ricky Noel Mitchell, you'll...
Noel spelled how?
N-O-E-L.
Oh, Noel, okay.
Yeah.
Mitchell, okay, Ricky Noel Mitchell, and
yes.
Google that and see what you come up with, okay?
Right, right.
Okay.
And other than that, I would say to Tom to get some wheels. There are a lot of ways to carry kayaks and load kayaks now to make it much, much easier. There's a device called a Holley roller that you can put on top of your car that makes it really easy to lift up one end of your kayak and load it up on the car, and it just rolls right up there. There are wheels that attach very easily to a kayak for you to wheel it down to the beach and get it in the water, and you just take the wheels out with you into the water. And very good systems.
Good, good. Martin in Lawrence, Kansas asks, can you talk about the type of kayak you prefer and how you rig it for ocean fishing? So you've talked about the kayaks, so can you talk a little bit more about rigging, what you take with you more specifically? And
I assume that we're talking about my fishing equipment here, as I said.
Yeah, I think he's talking about
actual rigging
and reel kind of stuff, but other things.
Other things, okay.
Yeah.
I carry a dry bag. In the dry bag, I have a camera, I have my snacks, water, sun lotion, and flies. In front of me, I keep a little hip chest type bag that I have my most common tools that I'm going to be using, like my pliers, my saltwater fishing pliers, some flies, hook sharpener, definitely. I also carry a very small gaff with me in case I catch something that's very edible and I need to gaff it. And in some other waters, I'll use a net if I'm really into releasing most of the fish that I'm catching. So it depends on the situation. Other than that, I will sometimes use what's called a water anchor, which is basically sort of a big sock that you hang overboard. That'll slow you down from wind drift, you know, so you won't drift away quite as easily. And a lot of times the wind and the current will be going opposite directions, so you can use that to your advantage if you use a wind anchor. Other than that, I try and carry a short safety rope with me in case somebody else I'm with gets in trouble and I need a rope to possibly pull them, and a headlamp in case I end up being out there after dark. But that's about it. Very rarely do I have a fish finder, and I do use it once in a while, but actually pretty rarely. I find myself sort of staring into it like a computer screen instead of paying attention to what's going on around me. So.
Okay, good. Yeah, that was a question I was going to ask about fish finders, but...
Roger, there's so many fish in Baja when you look at a fish finder. It's, you know, you don't know if you're looking at thousands of tropical fish or game fish or what. Where they are helpful is depth finding. That's where they can be
where you're at, yeah.
Unfamiliar with the area. Yeah. The other good piece of equipment is, of course, that little device they're calling the spot, especially if you're fishing alone or overnight, because it's a locator device, and if you do get in trouble, you can hit that thing, and your rescuers can find you very easily.
What about a GPS?
A GPS is a nice thing to have, especially if you're becoming familiar with an area, because you can mark spots where you discovered structure or, you know, caught fish and possibly want to return to it later, or you're in a very convoluted mangrove situation and you want to be able to find your way out, and GPS can really come in handy that way.
Yeah, I was going to say, we had mentioned Placencia, Belize before, and the mangroves there, it doesn't take long to get lost back in there. I mean,
right.
And then everything looks the same, you know.
Right.
Like standing in a pine forest in the Midwest where there's no mountains or anything, and all looks the same. But we need to take a quick break. We'll come right back and talk with Gary Moore about kayak fly fishing in Baja. Women's fly fishing in Alaska is owned and operated by well-known female guide Pudge Kleinkopf. Women's fly fishing offers several lodge-based fly fishing schools for women, as well as an array of small group guided trips for women and couples to some of Alaska's best-known waters for salmon, rainbow trout, arctic grayling, and char. Pudge also leads saltwater fly fishing groups to Mexico each spring. Beginners are welcome, and equipment is provided. Learn more about fly fishing for women at www.womensflyfishing.net. That's www.womensflyfishing.net. Or call Pudge at 907-274-7113. That's 907-274-7113. Well, you're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We're talking with Gary Bula about kayak fly fishing in Baja, Mexico. If you'd like to ask Gary a question, just go to our homepage, askaboutflyfishing.com, and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Well, we've got a couple questions here on the Internet that have come in. Okay, this is Dwayne, New Orleans, Louisiana, wants to know what you look for specifically in a kayak that you plan to use for fly fishing. Now, you had mentioned there are some, you know, rigged up for that, but if it wasn't, you had mentioned the well, but are there other things that you look for?
There's some... Ocean Kayak has just, in the past couple of years, has come out with kayaks that have a well between your legs that you can actually stash a folded-up rod or other equipment inside of. And so that's really a nice thing, especially if you're paddling through waves, for example, leaving a shoreline and you're having to crash through the waves. It's not great to have a fly rod hanging out of your kayak that may get dislodged. And, you know, for other items that you don't want to get either sunburnt or wet, it's a very handy thing. They're also set up so you can easily mount a GPS inside of them. Tracking is one of the main things that's really important to me because, like I said, some of these fishing kayaks can be up to 65 pounds long, and they're not as fast as a touring kayak. but if they track well when you're paddling them, in other words, they go in a straight line, fairly straight line, that makes a huge difference. One of the other ways, if I wasn't working with groups in Baja, I would probably have rudders on more of my kayaks. It's just working with groups. I have a lot of kayaks, and we're stacking them on a boat and traveling from place to place. So rudders are just another thing that can get broken. But a rudder controlled by your feet can be a great thing to have, and it really helps with your tracking, and it really helps in windy areas also. So those are some of the features to look for.
Would
you can also add rigging yourself if you want to add an anchor or something like that. There's great information out there on how to do that.
Would you suggest, if you were in the market for a kayak, to, you know, to buy it from a vendor where you can actually try it out, or do they
absolutely
offer those? Yeah?
Absolutely. And if you've never kayaked before, I would suggest taking a quick lesson from somebody. You don't need extensive lessons. It's not like diving or with tanks or something, you know, that type of technical learning curve. It's something that you can pick up very easily, but it does help to have someone lay you out on it. But I would, once you paddle around a little bit, it's really a great idea to try some different kayaks, and almost all of the vendors now will let you try them out.
Okay.
And they have special days where you can paddle them around. So
now, it's from a safety standpoint, it's not like a river kayak where you have to know how to roll it and come back up and do all that, right?
No, and it's actually, you can do it, but it's pretty hard for most people to do an Eskimo roll in a sit-on-top kayak. Number one, you're going to fall out as soon as you roll over. But the great thing about sit-on-top kayaks is it's very easy for you to get back into the kayak and get upright if you have someone give you one quick lesson on how to do that. So in Baja, it's very easy for me to get people acquainted with how to use a kayak, even if they've never done it before. Number one, we've got warm water to fall into. That's always nice. It's pretty easy. People get the knack within about a half an hour or so, normally.
Okay. Are the kayaks that you've been talking about all in the general price range, or are there some that are lower cost for the beginner?
There are, but I would, you know, they're all the very best, most rigged out fishing kayak might get close to $2,000, but you can get a really good fishing kayak for under $1,000. And any decent kayak is going to be probably $500 or more. So I would say get a little bit of experience with the kayak to begin with, and then buy one, and buy the best one you can, just like you would with your fly fishing equipment.
Okay. Did I just hear your peacock?
You did.
Gary warned me that the only thing he couldn't control as far as extraneous sounds tonight was these wild peacocks that are outside his house. So I got to hear one. That's good.
Yeah.
That's good. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's that time of year, so the males are calling, you know.
Oh, they're getting all excited back there, are they?
Yeah.
Okay. We have a question came in on the Internet from Jay Blevins in Georgia asking about canoes. Is it safe to fish from a canoe in the ocean?
In the ocean. Well,
I mean, where you do your kayaking.
I love canoes, and I own one also. I use it mostly on lakes. Canoes are, being higher out of the water, much more susceptible to wind and waves. So that's where I think a kayak has a real advantage, and a canoe could get pretty dangerous real quick. So, you know, in very, very protected waters, I think a canoe would be great, sure, no problem. And the neat thing about it is, you know, you're able to stand up and cast a little bit more readily, and you can stash more stuff in there if you're traveling from place to place.
Yeah. George in South Fork, Boise, Idaho, asks, how do you set up your fish finder? So you said you don't usually use one, but how do you set it up if you were going to use one?
We're going to use one. Well, I do have one, as I said, but I like to have my battery hidden inside my front cockpit, which is a closed cockpit instead of an open one like my rear cockpit. And some boats like Ocean Kayak Tridents that are made now to actually, they have a little place where you can mount your fish finder. They have a place inside where you can mount your sonar piece so that it shoots through the hull instead of being mounted on the underside of the boat where it can catch on seaweed or on gravel when you land and things like that. And usually use a small battery, like a motorcycle battery, but there are fish finders that actually run off C batteries and AA batteries also, and that works out real well too for short durations. Okay. So, yeah, I try to build it in. If it's my personal kayak, I can build it in, and then it's there, and I can remove the fish finder easily, you know, when I put the kayak away. And the battery and the sonar device stay in the kayak.
Okay. What about Marshall in Southern California asks, what sort of physical training should a desk-bound person do before taking a trip like this?
Well, I would say do a lot of lifting of beer glasses. That could always help. You know, you don't need to be in great shape. Kayak fly fishing or kayak fishing actually isn't really about long-distance paddling normally. But I find that once you're on a trip like one of my trips, after about the third day, it starts to feel really good to do a little paddling, and you decide, I think I'll go off and explore that far corner of the lagoon, you know. So it's great that way, and that you actually feel like you're getting some physical exercise. The first day, almost everyone hurts that they haven't been doing it in a while, but you don't have to be in great shape. Most people are fairly strong in their upper body, and they do just great.
Okay. Marshall added second question. It says, why does the shoreline not appear to get closer no matter how hard you paddle?
You know, I haven't heard of that. Oh, I think that's something that I heard about among the Scots. That's probably something that's just genetic with Scotsmen, I think. But
must be an inside joke here.
Yeah, so. Yes, Marshall's a good friend of mine. So.
Oh, okay. So. We had a question.
But it does seem to be true. It's
yeah.
When you're a long ways from something and you're paddling, it always seems like, my God, you'd think land was getting closer. But
do a lot of river rafting in Colorado and Utah. And
uh-huh.
There's been many days on the river where, you know, late afternoon that upstream wind comes and you're rowing as hard as you can down river and you're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
So I kind of know what he's talking about.
A little
about.
Daunting, yep.
Yeah. Angelo in Pennsylvania wants to know, are packages, I think he's talking about your kayaking trips, for singles? He says, I often fish and travel alone. So he's wondering, could he go on one of your trips as a single?
Oh, most of the people that come on my trips come in singles. I do take them out in groups. You know, we do a maximum of 10 people on most of my trips. So if he's talking about being guided solo and just coming out there with me, of course he could do that. It would cost him an arm and a leg, but, you know, he could do it. But, yeah, like I said, I do have couples that come once in a while, but most of it is just singles that sign on that way.
Okay. Now, when you do these kayak trips, it's a little bit different than having a guide in a drift boat or a ponga or...
It is.
You know, where there's somebody right at your side. So are you more hosting than guiding or just putting them into areas that you know are good areas to fish in, or are you kind of on your own?
I have a lot of repeat clients to begin with, and these guys have got it pretty figured out. And so what I do is I try and stick with people who have the least experience and guide them so that they can figure things out, because it does take some knowledge about reading the structure and presentation and how to strip and what fly to use and how to set up your leader and all that. So I'm out there with everybody all the time, absolutely. And, you know, I try, and sometimes I end up imposing myself on people, and sometimes people will ask questions like they should. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Let's talk about fishing equipment. We've got Peter in Costa Rica asks, what do you consider the ideal rod length and terminal tippet system for inshore kayak fly fishing?
Oh, that's a great question. We normally use 9-foot rods, but I am trying out some 8-foot rods, and I have a couple of 8-foot 6 rods. And one thing about landing a fish in a kayak, especially a larger fish, if you don't have help from another kayaker, is that you have to lift the butt of your rod over your head, keep the rod fairly flat, so that when the fish surges, when it gets near your boat, especially when it sees you, you don't break the tip of your rod. So you want to keep your leader knot, you know, your leader line connection outside your rod tip when you're handling a fish in close. And what you try and do is get the fish's head up out of the water, say, at the front of your kayak, and then sweep your rod over your head so that you bring at least the leader and maybe the fish, too, close to you with its head out of the water. If you can get the fish's head out of the water, you've usually got him. At that point, you can either grab the fish normally by hand is the best way to grab it. We always wear gloves so we're protected from fish's spines, but sometimes we use a boga grip or something, you know, some other sort of fish grabber to land it and remove the hook and release it, or invite it home for dinner, if that's what we're
doing. Okay. Now, as you just explained it, are you keeping your leader and tippet system then the length of your rod, basically?
Yes, or are you basically going the length of my rod. Thank you.
Okay.
And our typical leader would be like a 4-foot, 40-pound butt in Baja, would be a 40-foot, 4-pound butt, and then about a 24-inch length of 25 or 30-pound, and then joined with a blood knot to 20-pound. Some of the guys, depending on what we're fishing over, if we're fishing over a snapper or some toothier fish, barracuda, Mexican barracuda, or a few other fish that are rough on leaders, will add a short piece of 30-pound tippet. And that's very typical, even in the mangroves.
Okay. Marshall, your buddy there, asks, how many rods can you safely put in a kayak? Or do you need more than one?
That's a good question. Sometimes it's nice to take out two rods because maybe you're going to be fishing outside of the lagoon mouth for baby roosters. This is an example of what actually happens in Baja. And then you're going to go into the mangroves and you're going to go into the larger lagoon part of the day's journey and fish for some really heavy-duty barred pargo snapper that really pull hard. So you might want to use an 8-weight and a 10-weight. You might want to have both those with you. I would say a 10-weight is sort of our typical rod in open water and in most of the mangrove lagoons where there are fish like the broomtail grouper over in Mag Bay or the barred pargo over in the Sea of Cortez. It takes a 10-weight, definitely. And with skipjack also, you want to have a 10-weight, and sometimes you're wishing you had a 12-weight. But so 10-weight is kind of our typical rod. Folding up a rod and lashing it together so it's protected is a great way to do it, so it's not hanging out the back of your kayak and catching on mangroves or other kayakers. And then when you're ready to use it, either landing on a shoreline, assembling it, and folding down the other rod, or you can actually do that out in the water if you need to also.
Okay, so you're only going to have one rod put together?
Normally one rod, sometimes take two, because I know there's another situation coming up. Yes.
Yeah.
And that can work.
Even if you're not planning on using it, in case you bust something.
Actually, right. And in these new kayaks, like the Trident, you can easily slip another rod right in between your legs in the closed cockpit and store it there so you're ready with another rod.
We've got Paul in Cobb, California. He says, how do you secure your gear from loss if you capsize? This would, of course, include your rod, net, lunch, camera, etc.
Oh, great question. Everything we put in our kayak, we secure with a lanyard of some sort. Our rods, we normally don't do that, our rod and our paddles, but some with new clients that are not feeling confident, I will give them a lanyard for their paddle, for their rod. And once they get used to the situation, it's usually not a problem. I would say probably close to 1,000 people I've fished with in Baja out of kayaks, that we've lost maybe two rods, and at least one of those was from someone imbibing a little bit too much in the available beer.
Okay.
So, but everything else should have a lanyard or be clipped in, because it does happen. Once in a while, somebody will turn around a little bit too sharply, lose their balance, and flip the boat. But
It sounds like you kind of use the same philosophy we use on river trips, which is, you know, when you take off in the morning, everything is secured as if you're going to flip, you know.
Right, and right.
You don't plan on it, but if you do, you don't want to lose anything.
That's
know?
Right.
So, yeah.
Right.
Tim in Illinois wants to know about flies that you use down there. He says he ties his own and wondering what you use down there, what sizes you use. So I know there's probably a whole bunch of different things, but are there some common patterns that you use?
There are. You know, in the mangroves, clouser patterns work very well, and one of my favorite is the Amigo, which I have in a fly gallery on my website with instructions. It gets you down really quick. A lot of the time in a mangrove, there can be either current or there might be some wind. Oftentimes we use the wind to set ourselves up sideways in the wind and then cast right close to the mangroves as we're, you know, moving along. The wind is sort of moving us along, and we'll just make minor adjustments with our paddle to keep the proper distance from the roots of the mangroves so we can cast in stealthily. In that situation, a clouser pattern or weighted fly is really good because it gets down real quick, and you're often casting, making five strips, and then picking the line up again and casting again to a new spot as you've drifted along. So, and a lot of these fish are down at least 3 or 4 feet, and that works very well. We also use topwater patterns like crease flies. Snapper and other species will often be sitting in the mangroves with their eyes up looking for bait fish to swim by. And the crease fly or Boyd sandwich minnow or even poppers. I've had kids that I've been with use their freshwater bass poppers and do pretty well in the mangroves with them. So other than that, bait pattern flies are our favorites. Like, I have a couple of different patterns on my site. One is the Larry's minnow, which is basically a deceiver pattern with chartreuse. And that's chartreuse and flash are very good to use in the murky waters in mangroves. In clear waters, out in the blue water, we tend to go towards more subtle flies, like my Tux series or the Sardina series. And they're very good representations of the common bait in Baja, which is the flat iron herring. It's very similar to shad, which is all over the United States and freshwater lakes, and it's a very strong bait fish, and it's basically silver colored with a little bit of olive on top. I just find that in open, clear water, plainer colors, less flash, seem to work better than in the murkier waters around the mangroves, where flash and chartreuse and things like that really, really seem to help.
Okay. Need to take a quick break here again, but we'll be right back talking with Gary.
Thank you.
Pere Marquette River Lodge, a full-service Orvis-endorsed lodge, fly shop, and guide service, is located on the banks of the historic Pere Marquette River in Baldwin, Michigan. Pere Marquette River Lodge provides year-round lodging for the business or pleasure traveler, as well as a full-service fly shop and guided trips for steelhead, salmon, or large resident brown trout. For more information, visit them at pmlodge.com. That's www.pmlodge.com. Or call them at 231-745-3972. That's 231-745-3972. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Gary Bulla about kayak fly fishing in Baja, Mexico. If you'd like to ask a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use that Q&A text box to ask your question. Receive it immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. The question came to mind while you were talking just a minute ago, Gary, was you got the paddle and you've got a fly rod. First question is, does the paddle, you mentioned a lanyard on the paddle, the paddles don't float?
The paddles do float, generally. Okay. Most of the kayaks that we're using these days have a sort of a recessed area along the side of the kayak that you can actually strap the paddle into. What most of us find, and again, it's back to simplicity with this, is we hold the kayak paddle when we're casting across our laps, sort of tucked in there so that it's out of the way. Guys with a belly have a great place to tuck it in there, but if you have a hip chest on or some sort of a fishing pack, you can tuck it under that also, and that works really well. That way, you've got the paddle very available to you if you need to make a quick adjustment of your position, you know, after you've made a cast. Or actually, you might even want to grab the paddle with one hand while you've got the fly rod in the other hand. This can happen where a fish is pulling you directly into the mangroves. It's pulling so hard, you can see it's going to happen, and you want to grab the paddle with your left hand, say, and using your left hand and your elbow, you actually make a couple of backwards paddles and adjustments, and at the same time sticking your legs over the side so you don't get pulled in quite as fast.
Okay. Add a little drag there to the system.
Right.
What about fly lines? Are you using primarily floating, sinking tip, sinking lines? What do you use?
We primarily are using sink tip lines because a lot of our fish that we're fishing for are, you know, down a little deeper in the water column. There are a few situations, like in shallower mangrove lagoons, where we'll go to a floating line because we know that snapper and possibly other fish like Jack Crevalle or roosterfish will come up and take the fly on the surface, and then we'll go to a floating line in a something like a crease fly.
Okay.
Yeah, but I would say 90% of the time we're using a 30-foot integrated type line like Airflow's Depth Finder or Airflow's Scientific Anglers in Rio are all just making great lines for this. And these are the same lines we're using generally in the blue water ponga fishing also.
Okay.
We probably tend to use floating lines a little bit more there because we're often sight fishing the dorado and roosterfish.
Okay. Now, when you go out for the day, are you going out to target specific fish, or are you, is it more opportunistic and you're, whatever comes up you're after?
We generally have a really good idea of what fish are available from having fished the area before, but we're opportunistic fishers for sure. And the really neat thing about kayak fishing is, and you know, you don't have the guide saying, okay, sitting in the boat with you, cast right there. You don't have the captain throwing bait and you're casting right there. It's kind of up to you how aggressive you want to be as a fisher. I've had guys paddle around half the day with cigars in their mouths, leaning way back in their kayak and just saying they were just having a great time. Leave them alone, you know.
Yeah, okay. There's another Baja bum just surfaced on the internet here. Jay Mirakoshi says hi.
Oh, hey, Jay.
So he does a lot of fly fishing and guiding down in Baja, too. So
he does.
On our show.
Same area that I'm at, too.
Oh, yeah. Hey there, Jay. Thanks for checking in.
Yeah, thank you, Jay.
HJ in Jakarta, Indonesia again asks, since it's not possible to stand, and yet you say it is possible to stand, but he asks, what adjustments need to be made to your casting style? Are any tricks to casting from a seated position like that?
Ah, from a seated position. Very good question. Again, yes, if you haven't learned to double haul, I would say that really could increase your enjoyment and your success in kayak fly fishing. Double hauling makes a huge difference, especially with using these sink tip lines, and it also puts less stress on you. I think people that haven't picked that little skill up yet tend to wear themselves out a lot quicker and not be able to swim the fly in a horizontal line. If you're not getting the line out there, if you're not making a fairly good distance cast, your fly is going to travel more at an angle up, right? After you've let it sink down and you start stripping, it's going to travel at an angle towards you. Whereas if you can make a good distance cast, it's going to be traveling more in a horizontal fashion in the water column. And that's going to be a more realistic way of swimming your fly and attracting other fish. And you're going to be putting the fly in front of more fish that way also. So definitely double hauling. And once you get into a kayak and you start casting that way, you're going to discover real quickly, you know, how to keep your back cast up, because you're going to be slapping the water if you're not. So it's a lot like fishing from a float tube, just with a little heavier rig.
Okay, good. Yeah, good comparison there. Eric in Avondale, Pennsylvania asks, if you have not spotted a school of fish or surface activity, do you typically recommend to be most effective free drift, anchor, and fish structure, or slow your angle speed with a drift sock, with or without a fish find? Basically, he's asking, how do you find fish if you're not seeing anything, and what's your approach?
A couple of different approaches. One would be the method I mentioned before, where we actually troll, and we'll look for structure to troll over, or even just trolling out in the blue water, sometimes in circles or on a straight line if we're traveling from place to place. Another way to do it, on the islands, for example, we look for rock falls. We know that that's going to be a big pile of rocks under the water, as it is on the side of the island. And so we'll pull up sort of backwards with our backs facing the island and cast out so that our fly sinks down, and then we'll strip it up so it rides, you know, along the, just above the rocks, which are also slanted down and away from the island. And that's a really good way to find fish that live over structure. And as in any saltwater fly fishing, especially surf fishing along here, if you're not catching fish, you move on and you try a different area. If you stick to one spot, you know, you may go fishless all day. So you have to move around and keep trying. Absolutely.
Now, it seems to me that you know, from a seated position, and similarly, like you said, in a float tube or something, it's hard to see into the water to see fish. So are most of the time you are not sight fishing, or are you fishing?
Most of the time we are not sight fishing. We're structure fishing, I would say.
Okay.
Yes.
Or activity fishing, like rising fish? Or
right. We'll watch for rising fish. We'll watch in that lagoon at San Jose, for example. We'll see birds diving on bait balls. We'll see the bait balls breaking, and we know that there's either jack crevalle or rooster fish underneath those bait balls chasing them around, possibly even snook, you know. So we'll quickly paddle over there and try and paddle around, follow the bait ball around, which is something that, by the way, a boat would have a very hard time doing because it would usually scare the bait ball off pretty quickly, especially with a motor. But we can be very stealthy that way.
Bait ball probably sees you as another big fish coming.
That's right. They just move off a little bit.
Yeah.
And try to hang together.
Because there's probably another big fish on the other side of the bait ball.
That's right.
Yeah, some of the film I've seen recently in the Planet Earth series, and then there's been a lot of shows on TV with that. Marlins and dolphin chasing bait balls. Just incredible.
Incredible.
Daniel in Lake Havasu, Arizona, asks about controlling your kayak while fighting fish, and you've given us a bunch of tips on that, but he specifically mentioned something he's used in San Francisco Bay. He says, I used to use a 6-foot drag chain to control drift. Have you ever used a drag chain?
No, I haven't. I've heard of it being used. Usually that's a piece of chain that's tied onto a rope. It's sort of like an anchor that you drag along. And in the tidal mangrove rivers in Magdalena Bay, the current, especially during the full and new moons, can be very stiff. And in order to slow ourselves down a little bit there, we'll use a small kayak anchor, which basically acts like a drag chain because we've got a sandy bottom and it really just drags through, right? It never really sticks, but it does slow us down a little bit. So that there is a safety issue, as I said before, with anchors. You have to really be careful because if you don't have it set up right to begin with, it may list your kayak in a way that could become dangerous.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Don in Clarksville, Tennessee asks, he says, I fish from a kayak almost exclusively and have significant issues with wind, and you just mentioned that. Do you have any other suggestions on how to deal with wind?
Fish around islands and look for shelter. But other than that, the other methods that we have sort of covered, I think that drag chain method is a good one. A watertight, you know, water anchor, if it can work for you against the wind, that's one of the best ways to slow down the effects of the wind, definitely, is a water anchor.
And maybe try to use the wind to your advantage as far as
exactly. Try to use the wind to your advantage. That's what we often do in Baja. If the wind is blowing along a shoreline, we'll paddle against it, you know, for quite a ways, get ourselves set up to fish, and then let the wind take us along with minor adjustments, and it can work quite well that way.
Another question, Paul in Cobb, California, asks, how would you preserve your catch if you planned on eating it later? And you have mentioned that you once in a while take one home for supper, right?
Right. One really good method is to bring along a cloth with you, and when you catch the fish, immediately bleed it, if you want to, and wet the cloth and lay the cloth over the fish and lay the fish in your back well, and that cloth will help keep it cool with, you know, the wind, the breeze acting as sort of a refrigerant that way, evaporating the cloth, and just, you know, throw a little more water on it every once in a while, and you can keep the fish for quite a long time. The other way to do it, of course, is we often take along a little piece of equipment that divers use that looks like a giant safety pin, and you can hang your fish in the water that way and actually keep it alive if you want to for quite a while.
What did you say looks like a safety what?
A giant safety pin.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
What about, like, drag bags that you use on river trips or for diving, you know, the mesh?
The mesh bags? They're all right, but if you're paddling around, they add a lot of drag.
Yeah, exactly. They call drag bags.
But they are great.
Or dragging beer behind, but that's
like it. Yeah. You can actually use those while you're sitting still and then throw it up, you know, behind you on the deck when you paddle for a while. So that can work, too, yes.
All right. When you said bleed the fish, what do you mean by bleed the fish, and what does that do to help preserve the fish?
Well, in Baja especially, a lot of our fresh-caught fish get used for sashimi, and so we've learned some methods from the sashimi from the Japanese. And basically, bleeding the fish gets lactic acid out of the meat, and it tastes a lot fresher and a lot better on some of the species if you bleed them immediately.
And now, by bleeding them, what are you exactly doing?
Oh, how are we cutting them, you mean, to bleed them? Usually snipping the gills and just behind the gill plate, sometimes through the spinal cord itself behind the head.
Okay. Good to know.
So a knife is a good thing to have on board with you, of course, but that's another good reason to have a knife is just for safety reasons, especially if you're fishing in the kelp or places.
One last question here, and then we have to close it up here. Neil in Adelaide, South Australia, asks, out of all the different species you have caught, what is the largest and what is the most difficult to land? And I'm assuming he's talking about from a kayak. So.
I assume he's talking about from a kayak, too. Yeah. Well, in my experience, I have not landed a billfish on a kayak fly fishing, but I would say that yellowfin tuna, on one trip we got into a lot of yellowfin tuna, and talk about a Baja sleigh ride. It was pretty amazing. And landing them fresh, tuna just have this automatic motor that just keeps on going, as anybody who's ever caught one knows. So I made the mistake of grabbing this 20-plus pound tuna by the tail to get it into my kayak, and it immediately covered me with water and just about took my arm out of its socket before I finally got it into the boat and subdued it. But I would say that's probably the most memorable and difficult landing that I ever made in one of the larger fish, too.
It is amazing how much, pound for pound, how much stronger saltwater fish are than freshwater fish.
Oh, my gosh. People can't believe it. I have people on kayaks, the first fish they hook into, they're just screaming their heads off. They can't believe how powerful they are.
Yeah, it is
fishing
amazing.
For trout.
Well, Gary, unfortunately, it's time to wrap things up here. We're out of time, but stick around, folks, because we're going to give away that one-year subscription to Federation of Fly Fishers, one-year subscription to Fly Fusion Magazine, and that $20 gift certificate for Front Range Anglers. So stick with us here, and we will be right back. Family Ties, that's T-Y-E-S, Family Ties, is an organization which uses a shared interest in fly fishing and fly tying to enhance youth development and family relationships. They utilize resources in schools, communities, and businesses, and they invite your participation. Go to their website at www.familyties.com. That's family and then T-Y-E-S.com. And that Family Ties is where every fish is a trophy and every kid is a hero. Just a quick reminder to everyone before you leave the website tonight, please take a minute and give us your feedback about the show. You can find our link on your homepage on the section that says, what did you think of this show? Just click on that link, leave your comments, and we'd really appreciate it. Well, now it's time to give away a few of our gifts here. Do the drawing here. So let me get my computer ready. And we do this from our registration database. It's random drawing. And we have, give me just a second to get things set up here. It's a random drawing, so you have to register at the front end. Now, if you haven't done so in the past couple of minutes, it's too late, and you'll have to try again next time. But be sure you do it before the next show, because we're always giving away these nice subscriptions or gifts. So let's see here. For the one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers, and if you don't know about the Federation, you need to find out. Their website is fedflyfishers.org, fedflyfishers.org. So a membership is a great gift to have from them. And we've got Steve Antonic in Missouri. Steve Antonic in Missouri. So congratulations, Steve, on winning that one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers. I know you're going to enjoy it. Now we'll give away that one-year subscription to Fly Fusion Magazine. And that, you can find out more about Fly Fusion, which is a wonderful magazine out of Calgary, Canada. And their website is flyfusionmag.com, flyfusionmag.com. So check them out. And our winner there is Nick Anderson in Utah. Nick Anderson in Utah. So congratulations, Nick, on that one-year subscription, and we'll get that going for you. And I know you're going to enjoy that as well. So, okay, now I've got those guys jotted down here. Now, for tonight's question, and this is going to be about, let's say, okay, I'm clearing my queue here, make sure everybody's out of there before we start here. Gary talked about that there was one primary type of line that he uses in fly fishing from the kayak. What type of line is that? And we'll see what we get here, Gary. That's a pretty easy one.
Yes.
So I'm checking here, and one of these listeners ought to get it here fairly quickly. Where is everybody? Okay, we got an answer here. Let me check with you, Gary. Answer is sink dip.
Very good.
Is that correct? That's good. Okay, then we've got a winner in Sandy, Utah, Ashton. Just got yourself a $20 gift certificate for French Range Anglers. So, Ashton, what you need to do is, in that same text box you just answered the question, send over your name, your address, email address, so that we can get out that gift certificate to you. And then you can redeem that online at frontrangeanglers.com. Or, you're not too far away, Sandy, Utah, drop over to Boulder in Colorado and stop in the store and redeem it that way. So, congratulations, Ashton. Well, Gary, we really appreciate you being on the show tonight. I enjoyed it. Definitely a topic we haven't had before and very interesting to me. I sure learned a lot. And thanks for being with us tonight.
Well, thank you. It was really a pleasure. I really enjoyed it.
Well, good. Next week, or week after next, I should say, our next broadcast will be on April 21st. And we will be interviewing Eric Stroop. And Eric's a guide out in the east in Pennsylvania, and he's a professional guide there, and he's determined to make his fly fishing clients successful on every trip that he takes them on. And so listen in as Eric shares the same information he shares with his clients every day when he's out on the water and to teach them how to catch more trout. We're going to talk about practical, common sense techniques that you can use on the river to catch more trout. So join us then. We're going to have another great show. Tonight we'd like to thank the Federation of Fly Fishers, Fly Fusion Magazine, Women's Fly Fishing in Alaska, Keeney's Fly Shop, and Pere Marquette River Lodge for sponsoring our show tonight. If you think your company would benefit from sponsoring one of our shows, give us a call at 1-800-985-1673, extension 8, and we'll be happy to explain the options to you. That's 800-985-1673, extension 8. Don't forget to visit our website at askaboutflyfishing.com and make sure you're signed up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Thanks for listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We hope you enjoyed the show. That's it. Good night, everyone, and good fishing.